This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Our next guest is the Director of Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Professor Robin Wilson has written 13 books, is incredibly accomplished. So, Professor, I thought I'd bring you on to talk about Britney Spears.
Hey, thanks, John. I appreciate it. I love Britney.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting how, well, first of all, I was a big fan of her music. That was right when I was in high school. So, of course, everyone knew Britney Spears then. And, you know, there was some rough years where she was in the tabloids and she sort of made a comeback. But, you know, she's in the spotlight now because of this conservatorship, which I don't even know if I'm saying that correctly. But, Professor Wilson, this her case is really interesting. And I imagine, because I think you even talk about it in your law classes, I mean, it's a real interesting case to learn from and to get, you know, figure, you know, learn a little bit more about this process.
Yeah, you know, John, it's really interesting. I mean, this is an accomplished woman. I mean, she's running Vegas shows and got, you know, doing the choreography with dancers. And I mean, can anybody say she's hasn't really succeeded in life? And yet she's stripped of almost every right that an adult would have. You know, I was sort of like running down the constitutional rights that we talk about in law school, you know, the right to control your reproduction. Britney mm-hmm. doesn't have that, you know, right to decide what medicines you're going to take or not take, or autonomy over your body. Not for Britney, you know, no control over her money. And, you know, conservatorships were devices to try to help somebody who would be subject to fraud or undue influence, or where they had a demonstrated inability to take care of their own money, to basically have someone do that for them. But the effect here is that it stripped her of almost everything. She can't even ride in a car with her own boyfriend without permission.
Wait, how does that happen, though? Like, I mean, there obviously had to be some hearing at the beginning of all this to set it up, and maybe there were circumstances that made sense then, but isn't it written in that at a certain point this stuff goes away? Like, how does that happen in the United States of America to a successful woman?
It seems stunning, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, this isn't like, you know, bread on the shelf that just expires. You have to go through actually a really hard process. And if you listen to her, everybody should listen to her 24-minute statement, because it's just really powerful, because she's stripped of all these rights and she keeps saying, don't evaluate me. You know, I don't want to be evaluated anymore. I just want to decide to see my own therapist. I want to see my therapist in my home where there isn't paparazzi. And meanwhile, all the people around her, John, who've been making hundreds of thousands of dollars for, quote, managing her life, you know, they're making gobs of money. And if you listen to her allegations in the statement, there's a real question about whether the court ought to be investigating what they've been doing. And there's actually a process for that. So there is a process for getting out of a conservatorship. She took the first step, which was speaking to the judge the other day. But the judge has a lot of tools in their arsenal and you know, to be evaluating whether this has really served this woman well. And we'll, I guess we'll see whether the judge does that.
Yeah, what is next in this process? Is it just a one ruling? Are there going to be more hearings? I know that there was some, you know, back and forth on what would be made public, and Britney wanted certain things out, and her speech was really compelling in what you heard about her testimony. But what happens next now? I mean, is the judge just sitting there trying to consider it, or are there going to be more interviews with other folks? Do you know what happens next in this process?
Well, to get the conservatorship in place, they often take testimony from witnesses. I can't tell you for sure what I think the judge is going to do,
right.
But I think having heard Britney, I think there'll be a lot of investigation into what have the people who are supposed to have her best interest at heart. That's what the conservatorship is supposed to be about, protecting Britney's interest. She's sort of given the judge a lot of fodder for thinking that perhaps maybe these folks have overreached and, you know, are not always guided by her best interests. And even if they are, they just went too far. You know, like, you know, she says there are 6 nurses there all day and they even watch her undress and dress. Like, what's
what?
That about?
How?
Oh, yeah. It was in her allegations. Yeah, she said that. And imagine, you know, just think about if you were subjected to that all day long, you're like a bug under a microscope or something. And then you are, ironically, the person who's making all the money that keeps all of these people going, right? I mean, she's sitting on, a huge empire in some sense, and she's the person with the least amount of power, at least if you believe her statement.
Part of it is just so shocked that this has been going on for so long, and it didn't become until this Free Britney movement really became a thing this year. Not a lot of people knew about it. I can't believe she wasn't screaming from the high heavens every single day for the last 15 years or whatever.
Yeah, it's been since 2009. And, you started off your, the beginning of the show saying, she had some tough years. She did. That's the part that I actually teach in my family law class. We sort of, like, survey all of divorce and marriage law by using Britney Spears. But you'll remember that she married her high school sweetheart, Jason Alexander, on the January 2nd, in Vegas, right? So mm-hmm. She marries him in Vegas. She annuls that 2 days later. In the same year, she marries KFED in a, quote, faux wedding, which wasn't the actual wedding. Here's a woman at the time at $26 million. And she marries two different people in the same year without a prenup, right? Like, you don't see Oprah doing this kind of stuff, right? And to get in a conservatorship, you have to have, like, massive meltdown. It can't just be a single event. That's the test. It can't be a single event. It has to be a pattern that shows that you're incapable of running your own life, okay? Well, maybe back in that time frame and right after that, when she had the little kids and then she got divorced, like, boom, boom, boom. You might have said, okay, yeah, that's, she maybe isn't able to do that. But we're really far past that.
Yeah.
You your heart comes out to her when you listen to this 24-minute statement because you feel like she'll never get out from underneath it.
Yeah.
I'm sure she feels that way.
So how can someone just bring that? Like, where does someone even start? Obviously, it was her dad that initiated this, correct?
It was, and it sounds like kooky stuff, John, in America, but the truth is we use these devices for lots of people who are disabled. So
right.
Imagine I teach I write about a case in my treatise about a Down syndrome woman. So a grown Down syndrome child, they're not children anymore, but a grown woman. And her parents were raising her. And the case was about her, at that time, guardianship. So we use the same word for children, guardianship, and when they age out of being a child, we'll still consider somebody their guardian. If it doesn't happen until you're an adult, we call that a conservatorship, but it's the same sort of device. And in those cases with, like, disabled folks, a lot of these folks are never going to have the capacity to run their own life, like the Down syndrome woman that I'm talking about. So her parents had to go through a structure to make sure that they could continue to make decisions for her like she was a legal child, right? That's what's happened to Britney. Here's this amazing woman, 39 years old, and she's a legal child in terms of the law. That's what's happened.
It's crazy. Professor, I'm going to put you on hold really quickly. We had to take a quick commercial break. I have a few more questions about that. If anyone else does too, 312-981-7200. Please get in the line. This is Let's Get Legal. Plenty more coming up to this on WGN. John Hansen here on Let's Get Legal, 4:48 on this Saturday afternoon. Professor Robin Wilson joining us. And Professor, we're getting some texts in for Free Britney. And I'm really glad that this conversation is happening about our conservatorship. But I imagine, Professor Wilson, that hers is not the only one in which her allegations that people are abusing the system, making money off of this. I'm sure there are others out there, and people don't have the public ability to rally people around them. I imagine that the conservatorship, while there's many that work great, it is an area ripe for people to take advantage of other people.
Well, I think that, your autonomy, your ability to act for yourself is handed over to someone else. And, just being, alive, that sometimes people don't always have your best interests at heart. I think in the disabled cases that I was talking about, the parents very much do, right? They're losing their adult children. But we use things like conservatorship with aging parents, where we don't really have any reason to believe that someone is, necessarily adverse to the parent's interest, like their adult child. But there'll be places where you've seen adult children fight, right? Where mm-hmm. you felt like one of the people really cared about what was happening to the parent, and the other one maybe cared about their money, right? So in some sense, Brittany is just a you know, high, like most of her life, a high wattage, you know, example of things that we see every day in our own experience.
What sorts of, you mentioned that you use Britney Spears in class about the conservatorship, but also at her history. That's interesting. I imagine other cases, it provides a lens for students, something that is in the public eye, kind of like we're doing now, to offer a broad range of ideas coming out of that, right? Like that's the start of the conversation. I imagine students enjoy that kind of conversation back and forth. I mean, I think that's an important thing for understanding the law.
No, it is. I mean, we take like, you know, the supposed to be her annulment papers, for example, from the Vegas wedding. And, you know, you have to file a couple page document that says these are the reasons I think this marriage can be annulled. And it really kind of gives you some sense of what it means to be married. Like, why does a state even have an interest? So, yeah, students really love that. You know, one of the saddest things in listening to her the other day is, you know, I was ticking down the list of, like, constitutional rights that people have. She's saying that she doesn't have the ability to marry, right? She's saying that she doesn't have the ability to remove this IUD that she has inside of her, right? I mean, these are, like, fundamental, you know, liberties that people generally have, for which she has been, from which she's been disabled. You know, and I do teach in part of family law the right to marry cases, like Obergefell, same-sex marriage, you know. But there are these famous cases where you'd have somebody who was behind on their child support in Wisconsin, in this case called DeBlocky, actually tried to say to somebody who was behind on their child support they couldn't marry. And the U.S. Supreme Court struck that. They're like, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're Brittany going, I can't marry. My dad and everybody around me is not letting me marry. They won't let me ride in a car with my boyfriend. And it's stunning, in a sense, when you teach this body of law to realize how many things have been taken from her.
Is her only avenue of recourse what she's doing, going through this process of appealing the conservatorship? Or can she enter a different, you know, court track to get to the Supreme Court on this? Or, you know what I mean? Like file in district court about a specific limitation that's put on her? Or does the conservatorship hold up in court if she were to try and challenge that through another means? I know that's not the best worded question, but I hope you can make sense of what I was trying to ask.
You know, it's a good question, John. I mean, I thought about it the other day. Could she just file in another jurisdiction?
Right.
I went and looked, actually. And I think her conservatorship is in California. And until that California court yields its authority, another court could not get in it. So I think she has to actually appeal from the judge's findings that they deny the end of the conservatorship. That's the way I understand it as a procedural matter. What I think is super interesting is this is supposed to be about her money, her ability to take care of her own money. So why are all of these other things being regulated, like whether she can see her boyfriend, right? I mean, you feel like this kid's been grounded in her room in high school or something. You know, how come all of the other things follow from it? And it's interesting because I think you could tailor conservatorships to the specific disability that somebody, I'm using disability and like with scare quotes, but to the specific thing that led you to have a conservatorship and not spill over to every aspect of their life. But instead, it's acting like a binary switch. Okay, if you can't regulate your money, bam, you don't get to regulate anything. And I think the state, I think this will, Free Brittany will actually, I think, inspire state lawmakers to look at whether they needed to blast on this and, like, take everything from people, or whether they should tailor the remedy to the thing that the people can't do. And just think about that. Even in you know, we think about mature minor doctrines. I don't know if you know what that
no,
is.
No, I don't.
It's like, okay, so, like, a mature minor says, well, we get that minors aren't 18 or 21 yet. They can't make every good decision for themselves, but some of them they're mature enough to make. So think in a custody context, we'll often ask children, which parent do you want to live with? Or in the reproductive rights context, we'll say, okay, this child might not be old enough to live on their own, but they're old enough to decide if they're going to have an abortion, right? So it's tailored to specific zones of decision making. And then the age is like a sliding scale. But what do you have with Brittany? It's almost like Brittany's been made to be an 8-year-old forevermore, right? We're not even in that zone. not thinking about Brittany like we would think about another teenager.
I'm kind of surprised they aren't tailored that way. I had assumed that all of these things that she was referencing were specific things that were in the conservatorship at the beginning. Are you suggesting that when you get into a conservatorship, it's a little bit more broadly applied to an all-reaching sort of thing, and that in order to change those sorts of things, state lawmakers need to go and say, no, this needs to be like a line-by-line situation, or are there some that are and some that aren't?
I haven't looked enough at each of the states, but my understanding is that it was about money, but it incapacitates her as to all of these things. And you're right. My argument here is that the incapacity, the legal incapacity, should be more tailored to those things that, you know, she's not able to do, but not spill over to everything. So if your whole goal was to conserve her assets because she was maybe not able to conserve them, then do that, but don't disable her from everything. I mean, she says she's being made to take lithium, for example, which I know is, you know, very strong drug. You know, she doesn't want to take lithium. You know, I think she should be heard on whether she wants to take lithium. mind-boggling stuff.
It's interesting that it's just because sometimes it takes a public case like this, a celebrity like this, to create a movement behind things that in many years and decades, if laws are changed because of this, it will be because of Britney Spears, which I think 20 years ago would have been mind-boggling to anyone that maybe one day there's a Britney Spears Supreme Court case, but sometimes that's what helps change things.
Yeah, I mean, it was another Britney only a few years ago, John Britney Maynard.
Yeah.
Changed how you think about death and dying because she had to move all across country in order to have control over the manner of her own death. So, yeah, I give big props in my view to Britney Spears. I thought it took tremendous guts to say what she said, and she clearly didn't. It wasn't working lockstep with her own counsel. He seemed to be ticked off, but she seems to have gone off script. I personally found it very effective. I really did.
Yeah. Professor Wilson from the University of Illinois College of Law, really appreciate your time and breaking this down for us.
No problem.
I thought you were going to end with a free Britney there, Professor.
Yeah, I should. Free Britney.
Okay. I thought you were ready for that. Okay. I'll prep you better next time. That's my bad. Thanks, Professor.
Okay. Thank you, sir. See you.
All right. Quick break, then we'll wrap things up on Let's Get Legal.